What?
When the great Mama died.
Yeah, so when the great Lama dies, we're praying for him to be reborn here. But shouldn't he get to stay in Pure Land and just enjoy it? Because
we pray that this Lama act.
Yeah, so what we're doing here is we're looking at the Lama as somebody, you know, especially if it's our teacher, let's say our teacher, you know. Then we're seeing that person as somebody who has developed bodhicitta, who has developed a realization of emptiness, who has the ability to control their what happens to their consciousness. And from their side, they can go to a Pure Land and relax. Yeah? But what we're doing is we're really crying out, you know, help! You know, I need help, and I need you to come here because my mind is too gross. If you're born in the Pure Land, you know, my mind's stuck here. I can't communicate. So please, we're asking, you know, the Lama, out of compassion, please take rebirth here. So we're not saying out of ignorance, anger, and attachment, take rebirth. We're saying out of your compassion, you know, because we need guidance. Please come back to our world. Okay? And making that request prayer from our side, it creates a very strong imprint on the mind to meet pure teachers and teachings, because when we make that prayer with sincerity, we're really valuing having a teacher, and we're really valuing the teachings. And so if we have that real strong value of those things, we're creating the karma to meet them. Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Does
a man refuse?
The compassionate ones don't. You know? It's like... Well, we can still ask them, but if they aren't compassionate, maybe they don't listen so well. You know? But usually we're trying to look at our teacher as that, yeah? But the thing is that, like, I remember in one prayer to Chenrezig, it was saying that Chenrezig is bound to sentient beings by compassion. Like a mother bound to her child with compassion, you know, Chenrezig's compassion binds, you know, binds into us. Yeah? And so you can feel this, because like as you start to develop compassion, you feel much more responsibility for others. You know, it's not like, well, ciao, you know, ciao guys, I'm sick of you, goodbye. It's, you know. Yeah. And so you can see that by the prayer His Holiness makes, which I can't remember the words exactly, but something to the effect of, you know, as long as space exists, as long as sentient beings exist, I will come back and help and be involved. And so again, you know, from this you can see why bodhicitta is so important. Yeah? Because if other beings didn't have the bodhicitta, this altruistic intention, then they wouldn't come back and help us. You know? They get born in the pure realm. They'd attain nirvana. Good for them. You know, who cares about us? So that's why they say, you know, that the altruistic intention is the source of happiness for all beings. Because that's the link that keeps the holy beings bound to us. And by their being bound to us, then they have to help us. You know, and similarly, you know, not to just leave it that they're bound to me and they have to help me, but, you know, when we're cultivating the altruistic attitude, to recognize that too, you know, to be bound to sentient beings, because then that becomes the source of happiness of all the other beings, because then we'll continuously hang around and help.
And it's like you sort of would want to get sort of like a medium.
Well, these things are in terms of just without a spiritual motivation, you get born in the form of formless realms or like that. But see, that's again why spiritual motivation is important, because if you have a spirit, you know, a motivation to become an arhat or to become a Buddha, then you will take a rebirth in a situation where you're able to continue to practice. Okay? So these motivations are listed in terms of, you know, Joe Blow out on the street, you know, develops samadhi because he thinks it's great to have samadhi and it feels good. Yeah? Then he gets reborn in the formless realm. He didn't have a spiritual motivation.
So all of these intensities, if they don't have a spiritual motivation.
And that's why you look, you know, and the really good teachers, you know, emphasize continually. You know, that's why determination to be free from samsara is so important. Because if you don't have that determination to be free from samsara really firm, and you start doing these practices to generate concentration, you know, you might have a lot of, you know, you might develop concentration, and that's fine. And then if you have a good teacher, your teacher will train you to use that concentration to develop wisdom, to develop bodhicitta and everything else. But if you don't have really firm determination to be free of samsara, and then, you know, it's kind of like weak determination to be free of samsara, then you start doing lots and lots of concentration practice, and you don't have a teacher around to say, hey, hold on, you know, remember your motivation and think of the suffering of cyclic existence. If you don't have somebody around to, you know, remind you of that, and you just start doing these concentration practices, you know, it's like they say, I've never experienced, but, you know, maybe previous life, but I don't remember, you know, that it's just like so blissful that, yeah, that it's easy to get lost.
Mm-hmm. So it just seems awfully difficult to break that
time. Yeah, that's why we're here.
Yeah. And so how do you start trying to pull out of that?
Okay. That's a really good question. I think we all understand that, okay? Because we have to, I mean, the reason that all these pleasures seem so fantastic is that they give immediate, they give you an immediate zap, okay? Whereas like we say, may I become enlightened, we don't get any kind of immediate zap. You know, it's like, yeah, where's Hot Fudge Sunday? Definitely, big sugar rush, okay? So what we have to do is start thinking of the limitations of Hot Fudge Sundays and all these kinds of things, you know, and the advantages of enlightenment, okay? So it's kind of like if you have a little kid, and you show that kid, a college textbook. The kid is just going to go. I mean, he's like preschool, yeah. And she looks at the book and goes, you know, Mama says, you know, read this, and kid goes, you know, and I don't even know what to do with it. Which way's up, you know? And the kid can just feel. I mean, this is insurmountable. How can Mama expect me to read this? You know, I don't even know which way's up in this book. Okay, but then if the kid starts to learn the ABCs, then they begin to say, oh, well, yeah, I can read ABC, so I can at least tell that this is something familiar. It has the same alphabet. I can't read it, but there's something going on here. Yeah, and then as the kid starts progressing and learns to read more, they can pick out some words. And then some phrases, and then they can get the words, but they can't understand the meaning. And as they train more and more and more, then they can start to get some of the concepts. And, you know, so it's like this gradual process of learning to read the book. Okay? Now, if a little toddler just kind of learned ABC and said, oh, I feel so good learning ABC, why learn to read the college textbook? You know, it's just, learning ABC is good enough for me. You know, Mama gave me a lollipop for that, and that's all I want, and that's good enough. That's all the happiness. You know? And Mama's there saying, well, a lollipop is nice, but, you know, think of your future, you know? And you have to have a career and earn a livelihood, and how are you going to support yourself? And the kid says, no, I just want the lollipop, you know? Don't talk to me about careers and, you know, this thing. Well, that's because the kid has a limited view. The kid's only seeing the advantages of learning, of earning, you know, getting the lollipop and learning the ABCs, but they're not at all aware of the advantages of learning to read the college textbook. So it's a thing of, you know, cultivating the motivation slowly, 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 and seeing the limitations of Hot Fudge Sundays and banana splits. Yeah?
So
there's
what you're saying, it's hard to just, in the abstract, see the limitations of Hot Fudge Sunday, but as you practice dharma,
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's some kind of scale where as you practice any dharma, the hot plate suddenly starts becoming less intelligent. And
definitely.
You tackle that side of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do it at the same time. You begin to see the disadvantages of the hot fudge sundae. That makes you more eager to practice the dharma. As you practice the dharma and you start to realize that it works and that you actually are happier, you know, forget about enlightenment, you're even happier now practicing the dharma, then you get more enthusiasm. Oh, it makes me happier now. Well, enlightenment must be even better. And so then hot fudge sundaes just aren't quite as important as they used to be. Yeah? And so it's like, you know, when you're really hungry and you want a sugar fix, you know, hot fudge sundaes seem really glamorous. But if you sit there and you imagine eating hot fudge sundae after hot fudge sundae after hot fudge sundae, you know, even the thought of it makes you feel quite ill. Yeah? So you begin to realize, well, hot fudge sundaes have their limitations. Yeah? They can't make me everlastingly happy. Yeah, they just can't do it. And offer it not with this feeling of a hot fudge sundae is bad and I'm bad if I'm attached to it, so I'm going to deny myself a hot fudge sundae in order to be holy. Don't ever have that motivation. Really, that's just... Okay? But it's more through just sitting and thinking, well, you know, I eat this hot fudge sundae. It's great. It's gone. What do I have 15 minutes from now when it's gone? I'm still sitting here dissatisfied. It's not going to solve my problems. And if I can really think of, like, you know, generate this feeling of wanting the happiness for other beings, and so I'm going to offer this hot fudge sundae to the Buddha in order to create the positive potential to, you know, for the happiness of others, to lead them to enlightenment. And you imagine the Buddha, you know, and then you take this hot fudge sundae and you transform it into, you know, the blissful wisdom nectar, which is infinitely more delicious, you know. And you offer that to the Buddha, and then the Buddhas, you know, just really love it. Yeah? Then you can, like, really feel some sense of happiness for offering it.
Did you do a spiritual meditation and just, like, rebirth? Right?
Well, again, it depends a lot what you're praying for and what you're dedicating for. And so you'll notice among some people, you know, like, you have whole Buddhist traditions dedicated to being reborn in the Pure Land. So the motivation for doing that practice is to be reborn in the Pure Land. When you dedicate it, you pray to be reborn in the Pure Land, then that sets really strong imprint in your mind to get that result. Whereas somebody else, let's say, might say, no, I want to have a precious human rebirth and I want to be able to meet a fully qualified tantric master and myself be a fully qualified tantric disciple and be able to do that practice. So you pray and dedicate that way. Yeah? So it doesn't mean you have to choose between this. I think it's good to cover all our bases. Pray and dedicate for everything, you know. Yeah. But it's very much going to depend on you know, different people's aspiration. Yeah. Like, I think I remember Che told this story. I don't know, I might have told it to you once before. In Ganden Monastery in Tibet, this was before, they have Lama Tsongkhapa's throne, Jay Rinpoche's throne, and one day, a calf, you know, the caretaker monk came in and saw that there was a calf sitting on Jay Rinpoche's throne. And the caretaker went to ask his Lama, and the Lama had psychic powers, and was able to see that, you know, this calf in a previous life had been this old lady. And, you know, all the Tibetans come there and they make prayers. And this old lady had prayed, may I sit on the Ganden throne. May I sit on the Ganden throne. But she didn't say, may I sit on the Ganden throne as, you know, a human being who practices the Dharma. You know, it was like... Yeah. So you got to really check off how you dedicate. Okay. Okay. Can I go on? Just for a little bit more. Okay, so then we have, well, actually, in answer to your question, Gary, they do say if you have a really full, intense motivation, you know, for enlightenment, you get that. If it's a middle spiritual motivation, and, you know, then you might be, get the result of a solitary realizer, and then a smaller one would be as a hearer.